RadioInfluence.com.
This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
And hello again, everybody, to this Tuesday, January 22nd edition of the Landry Football Podcast. First of all, some house cleaning. Apologies for the no podcast on Thursday, as many of you hopefully heard or saw up on the website anyway, for those of you didn't. After spending the East-West game on the road scouting, and this seems to happen every year, I get sick. I think it's the football season grind. And for those of you who don't know, I spent a lot of time, you know, just in my home office, you know, by myself looking at film all year long. And I don't know what it is, but, you know, you're not around people. And doctors tell me, you know, if you're not around people a lot during football season and or, you know, at any particular time for whatever reason, then when you get around people, your resistance is a little bit low. Anyway, combination, I think, of that, going to the East-West game and then right to the Senior Bowl, being exposed to maybe a lot of germs and resistance being low, got sick, got the flu. Okay, no problem. I've done work with the flu, and I worked all week the Senior Bowl with the flu, quite frankly. But this has not really happened to me, but maybe once or twice before in my life. Got the whole laryngitis situation. Could not speak. By Thursday, it was so bad, I thought, man, this is just going to be awful. I didn't want to subject folks to have to listen to me. Not that it's a you know, piece of cake listening to me anyway, as I don't have the best voice. But that was awful, to say the least. So didn't want to do that. That was the reason. It's come back a little bit. It's not real strong. It's strong now. It doesn't last very long, but it's getting there. So we're going to get through this podcast. We're excited, obviously, as we last podcast we spent on Tuesday, and we recapped the conference championship game. What I want to do today is get into a little bit of Senior Bowl and a little bit of Super Bowl from a couple of different perspectives. Got a couple of questions to answer as well that people have sent in. Michael and Richard have sent some good questions in, so we're going to get into that. In fact, I'm probably going to address one of the things that that Richard asked in his questions. One, a couple of reminders. Again, except when I don't have laryngitis, this podcast is on Tuesdays and Thursdays. On Wednesdays, and we tape the – good thing we tape the – Rush the Field podcast, the college podcast, Monday last week. I did it as I was busy with the Senior Bowl and needed to get it done a little bit earlier. Had I not done it on Monday, probably wouldn't have been able to do that thing, because it really – the voice started to go on Tuesday. So Tuesday night when we taped the podcast, Rush the Field, I probably wouldn't have been in a real good situation to get that in. So anyway – you can catch that on Wednesdays on LandryFootball.com at Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, where you normally get these podcasts, subscribe to it, and you can get the podcast Landry Football on Tuesdays and Thursdays, as I mentioned, and Rush the Field on Wednesdays. So look for that. If you have not joined us at LandryFootball.com, a reminder of what we are doing and what's going on. Obviously, a lot of focus on the Super Bowl this week, but there's a lot of work that I've been doing on free agency, a lot of work I have been doing on the draft, and so certainly that is going to be first and foremost what we're going to have coming up for you. We're going to bring you some X's and O's look into the game, the Super Bowl, obviously. And then we're really going to hit hard into the free agent concepts, ideas. What we want to try to do, and the mission of this website, was to get people to understand, you know, how it works in a personnel department, what's done, why it's done, and kind of do it along the same line. So that's what we're going to do, and we're going to explain. So I'll explain this right now, for example. Yeah, we'll give you lists of free agents and so on and so forth, but it's about some news and notes and scouting notes on them and their contract status. But remember, players are not technically free agents to the start of the new league year, which we'll get into those dates in February after the Super Bowl and whatnot. So technically, their contract will be up, but it's not up yet, and there's still time for them to avoid free agency, or, you know, there's still time for teams to put a tag on them so that they are never hit free agency. So who you think might be a free agent, many of them won't be free agents. So people say, oh, man, I'd love for my team to sign Grady Jarrett or Jadeveon Clowney or DeMarcus Lawrence. Yeah, that'd be a really good fit for him. Folks, D. Ford, boy, I'd love to sign him. And good pass rusher can help us. Those guys are not going to be free agents. They're going to be on some free agent lists, but they're not going to hit free agency. So some free agents are not free agents. On the other hand, other players that for whatever reason are, you know, most usually the case is, okay, what their contract is due this year may not be what the team wants, so they will let them go. They still may be good players, good valuable players, maybe not long range, but good 1 or 2 year contract type players that could really help your team. So in the ever, you know, ending flow of who's a free agent, who's not a free agent, you know, it's kind of like you can have it like a draft board, but you're constantly taking names on and off. And unless, you know, you keep up like with us at LandryFootball.com, you don't know who's a free agent, who's not. So what we do and what we will do, what I already have done and worked on and polishing up before we get it up on the website after Super Bowl this week, is going to be a grading of every player in the league by position. And for those of you that are veterans of this, you know what that is. You know that it will tell you what a blue grade means, how guys graded out. And so you'll see that every player. Really important to know. Why? Just for the reasons that I mentioned. Whether a player is a free agent, could become a free agent, you know exactly how they graded this past year. So if you see a guy, if you see a Grady Jarrett or DeMarcus Lawrence or D. Ford and they graded out of blue and you know, you read somewhere there on the free agent list, well, you know, hey, Chris graded him out of blue this year. That's a great player. Well, you pretty much know they're not going to be signed by someone else. If for some reason the team doesn't sign him, you're going to be able to follow with us in our notebooks and our free agent reports as to why they didn't sign, so that you know exactly what might happen. You know, the contractual issues or problems or off the field issues, so on and so forth. So, in essence, you know, at any point in time by looking up how the players graded, you know how a player graded out this past year. So you know if a player comes on the street tomorrow or, you know, the first day of free agency, you know, or they come off the board, you know exactly how they've graded. So that's the way we do it because that's how it's done in the league. You grade everyone, and then you certainly, and I'll do this as well, I'll provide some free agent lists for you of, you know, as we go into free agency, we'll do that. We'll put the list up. We'll update it. Who's franchised? Who's taken off the board? You know, for example, all the blue grade, red grade players, we'll do that for you. And then, you know, you can keep a record of who's doing what, like a free agent board is in the NFL. And of course, we're also going to be work concurrently with that is the draft boards. We're going to get that out and we're going to get scouting reports on the players for you. Thinking about doing more audio scouting reports. It's something that it appears like folks may be interested in. We're going to play around with that, maybe provide some information, written, some audio, certainly like your feedback on what do you like best. You know, you can't please everybody. You know, some people like this, some people like that. I mean, some people are not going to be happy either way, but I want to try to do the best I can to provide it for you. So anyway, that's kind of what we got going on. I want to get into the meat of the show today, but also remind you that we've got our post savings special promo going on LandryFootball.com. So take care of that. Take advantage of that, particularly the year membership. What a great opportunity for you right there. And our War Room newsletter, which we did not get to this Friday due to illness, was not able to get to it, but promise you that we're working on that to make that a regular thing every Friday. All you got to do is go to LandryFootball.com, see the War Room, sign up for it, and we'll enter you into some contests, but get you some free information in the War Room newsletter that's a little bit different than what we have for you on the website. And on this podcast. So you want to take advantage of those things. All right. I want to get into a little bit of Senior Bowl week and a little bit why we do things the way we did it. It was my, I was trying to figure out, it was like 44th, 45th straight year. I used to go to the Senior Bowl as a youngster before I was old enough to get into coaching. It was something I did. I can remember to put a time frame on it for you when John Stallworth from Alabama State was in the Alabama A&M was in the game. So back in the early 70s, I go back to see some of the greats that played and participate in the Senior Bowl. Obviously, would go there and watch, and it was a little different at that point in time. You didn't have the information age that we have today, but it was a great learning experience to get there and see the practices and see a lot of personnel people, and is one of the, quite frankly, reasons why I wanted to get into scouting as a youngster. And I did, first of all, got into coaching, and then ended up, didn't know if I was going to go coaching or scouting, and then, of course, it ended up being both for stretches. But that's how far I go with it. So I've been to everyone for a long time. Obviously, now 30 of those years has been a member of the NFL as a scout or a coach. So everyone asked me about the Senior Bowl and why it's the premier game and what's the circumstances that make it such. And it's always been coached by pro coaches. So it's a great opportunity for players to get involved in that aspect. That's really huge. It is different than the combine and much more effective in evaluating football skills than at the combine because you're practicing football during the week. We put guys in one-on-one situations. It's very, very valuable. We try to tailor the rules in practice and in games to accentuate the individuality of evaluating a player. Now, I know that seems backward. Everything you hear me talk about is the importance of the team concept, playing within the team, evaluating players individually within the team concept. All of those things are true. But those are things, that's what we call breaking it down, why we try to strip apart the things that might be able to camouflage a player's weaknesses, but accentuate some of his individual qualities. For example, if you've got a guy that's a really powerful run blocker as an interior offensive lineman, a center or a guard, but may not be as good in pass protection, you may slide and cover him up a little bit in the pass game. That's fine. That's exactly what he is and exactly what you want to do. But you want to see the individual qualities in one-on-ones, how he can handle himself in those situations, so that it, not to embarrass him, but to really accentuate what the guy is or what the guy isn't. So you don't see, you know, maybe the lack of length. He doesn't have the foot quickness to be able to get out and protect wide. That's okay. It doesn't mean he can't play. It just means it gives you a better understanding of what he can or can't do. Things that, from a coaching standpoint in college, you can hide a little bit and cover up a little bit. Same thing, particularly when you evaluate defensive backs. Yeah, you know, you may play a guy up in press coverage all the time. He never plays an off, because that's what you need to do in college in your system. Or you always play him off and never play him up. That's fine, too. Those are all schematic intricacies that will help you to help that player flourish and to help your team flourish at the college level. But, you know, at the pro level, again, we're not trying to eliminate. We're not trying to embarrass anybody. We're trying to identify what are the qualifications that a player has and what type of player is he. Not just I like him, I don't like him. I think he's a first rounder, a fourth rounder, a fifth rounder. There's no such thing. Okay, what you're looking for is a grade of guy, and then you stack them, and then they fit into a range of where they might go in the draft. But these tests that we give them individually really help to evaluate a player. The other thing that I think is really helpful is you get to spend a little bit more time in meetings with these players than you do at the combine. So what we always try to do is focus a lot on guys. We know we're only going to get maybe 15 minutes with this guy at the combine or maybe some extra time. We'll spend some time with these guys here at the Senior Bowl to make sure. You go in with a plan of who you want to visit with. You've got the position coaches visit with certain guys. You got the coordinators visiting with certain guys. And folks, you're going to have to pardon me a little bit more coughing today until we shake this. It gives you a lot more time to visit with these guys. Now, it is definitely advantageous to coach this game. For the Niners and for the Raiders, you get an entire week of coaching these guys in meetings. So here's what you can do is you go ahead and you prepare certain things that you want to learn about the player. I can tell you, I know that Jason Garrett did this a few years ago, and a couple of guys have adopted this. And it's a good lesson. You don't come in with a playbook. You say, guys, we're going to create a playbook, and we're going to put in X amount of plays and formations and looks, and you're going to have to take notes and know it. You're going to have to, you, the player individually, going to have to make that playbook. And that is a good way to do it because what it does, it tells you what are the recall ability of the players, what are their ability to take notes. It doesn't mean, again, that you eliminate them, but if you take and look at the notebooks during the week, you can see who's a good note taker and who's not. You can help them develop better note-taking skills, better conceptual ideas of how to understand the game visually a little bit better. Because the one thing that we have to know, and I get this a lot, people will say things like, well, I don't care whether a guy's smart, you know, whether he can learn in the classroom. All that matters is playing football. What you don't understand is how well he plays football and how well he can adjust to different schemes and concepts is directly correlated to his intelligence. Well, I don't care what he knows about, you know, math or writing or, you know, as long as he knows football, he's football smart. That is a old hackneyed used phrase that's really not accurate. In some cases, it is accurate. Most cases, it's not. And here's what I mean by that. Learning, I don't care if it's calculus, nuclear physics, you know, learning to be a doctor or a lawyer or an accountant or learning to be an electrician or a plumber or somebody that works with their hands. There's still applied knowledge where you need to learn. And what we're trying to determine through all these processes is what type of learner is this guy? Not just is he dumb or not. I don't just want to rely on some grade, on some test, of an intelligence test or a football IQ test or a Wonderlic test, which we do them all. Those are valuable. And I'll get into that a little bit more as the combine approaches. But we want to see what it is, how this guy goes about learning. Is he a visual learner? Can he take good notes? Is he a guy that you're going to have to rep more because he doesn't take really good notes that you have to explain it to him five times? Well, listen, I'm going to tell you something, and I'm not going to mention any names, but there's some guys with gold jackets that weren't really good book learners or classroom learners. That's fine. There's no issue with that. You can become a good learner in different ways. Some you have to see it a little bit. You have to go. That's why we have walkthroughs. Oh, I see it now. I see it. On the board, you know, there are a lot of things. That's why there's a lot of studies on how people learn. You know, you've heard things, guys that are dyslexic, then you get guys that just are not dyslexic, but they see things in the X's and O's, the squares and the triangles and circles that we draw. They don't quite see it. They see it on film and it helps them. They see it on the iPad, it helps them. But when you walk it through, then they kind of do it a couple of times, then all of a sudden they start to get it. You don't eliminate players, but you go in with a better understanding of what a guy's aptitude is, what his learning skills are. And so what type of a learner are they? And that's important. That is important to understand, because if we take this guy, here's how you're going to have to coach him, because here's how he is. Are you okay with that? You're not? Then we need to know, because we need to go somewhere else, because this is what this guy is. He's hard-headed. He doesn't learn very well on the board. He doesn't take good notes. He doesn't have good penmanship. He's a little bit sloppy, but when you walk it through him a few times, he gets it and he knows it. Other guys, you tell it to him, you teach him, you put it down on paper, you put it into the iPad, he sees it visually, boom, he's got it. You know, he's a low rep guy. High rep guys, low rep guys, we use those terms all along, but it is not to stigmatize someone, it is to better indicate what type of learner they are. Really, really important. So there are a lot of things, like making a guy write the old playbook. You take notes and you write it in. That helps you learn a little bit about who can do what. And obviously you're teaching different things, each position coach putting different things. And then obviously you're reviewing that every day. And you see not only who took good notes, but who went and read those notes over at night. You know who's prepared. You know who's just kind of winging it and who's living off of their athletic qualities. You can begin to learn a lot about a player if you put them through a situation where you're actually coaching for a week. So that's important, and that's beneficial from a Senior Bowl standpoint. There are a lot of good things that they've improved upon with the Senior Bowl as well. They learned a little bit about financial, how to handle finances. Their parents are invited into a lot of that. They get a general feel for how the contracts work and the language and what it means and what financial advisors might tell you, don't tell you, who's qualified for that, terms that you want to be leery of, so you don't get taken. All those things are beneficial. And then they do some things that I think are important that with these games to help the community understand the importance of going out and visit hospitals, sick children, and befriending them and helping them, being mentors, things that a lot of them do at the college level. I don't think college kids get enough credit for the time that they spend and do things in community work that kind of build off of that. So it's very, very good. It's the practices are great. The meetings are great. The game is great in that you get an opportunity. Now, the game is difficult because it's hard to get a flow. In practice, you can practice long enough without the restrictions. You can give enough reps to every player there. In a football game, it's a game. It's who wins may not be that important, but it's still a game. It's still a clock, and you still, depending on the flow of the game, you get guys in and out. You maybe don't get as many reps for some guys as you want, or the timing of the reps or the situation is not ideal. So that's why the game is, quote unquote, not as important, because you may not get every situation that you'd like to get through the course of the game as you would in a scrimmage or a practice type atmosphere. So that's why we combine both, and it's an opportunity to improve themselves. You know, people tell me, can you hurt yourself? Well, first of all, you can help yourself a lot in the All-Star games. in the combine. Can you hurt yourself? Well, in my opinion, the only way you hurt yourself is if you have a bad attitude, you don't work hard, you don't listen. Very few of those guys do that. If you just show a significant lack of ability on certain things, yeah, it could hurt you. You could get exposed a little bit. But, like, for example, the corner that's got maybe some length but doesn't have good speed, you know, he plays up on a guy and he's his own corner. It just means that if he shows a lack of ability to flip his hips and turn and run, it just means he may not be an outside corner in the league. But he could be a slot guy. He could be an inside guy at safety. That's okay. You can line him up in safety and let him do certain things there. You just want to learn things about him. Again, it's not so much hurt help. It's about, you know, grading a player and understanding what he is and what he isn't. And that's a big part of it. So much of information about scouting in the draft is so inaccurate today. People are enamored with mock drafts. This guy's hot. This guy's cooling off. He's moving up and moving down. Folks, I can tell you, none of that's true. None of that is accurate at all. That's what the draft nicks, these amateur scouts and draft fans that have websites and, you know, talk in different media forums. That's what they think. And that's what they sell. Oh, your team's going to take this guy. You know, the Cowboys are going to take this guy. The Niners love this guy. And this is none of that really applies. It is an evaluation process. And eventually, as you stack your board, you're going to come to certain conclusions come draft time. But this whole thing about, well, this guy's moving up or moving down. How can you move up or down a board that hadn't been set yet? It's a lot of hype, and we try to be real here as to what truly goes on. So, with that said, there's guys that I think do a really good job. I think that from this past week, you know, if a guy like a Drew Locke was very impressive in meetings with coaches and, you know, sitting in on some of those that I was involved in, he really has a keen understanding of the game and, you know, relayed things very well, did a really good job. He's also physically got a lot of ability. All the quarterbacks did a good job. He probably did the best job. Duke quarterback Jones did a really good job in the game. But, you know, I thought Deebo Samuel, the receiver from South Carolina, was outstanding, as was Terry McLaurin. Penny Hart, if you are a member of LandryFootball.com, you've got the breakdowns of all these guys and what Penny Hart of Georgia State did. There were three of the better receivers in this game. I thought Raquel Armstead of Temple was outstanding with his vision, his strength as a running back. I think he's a good mid-round runner, and I think that's important to understand and kind of where that guy's grade will take him, and I think can be a make-it guy in the league at the next level. So remember that name. Remember this name, Dax Raymond from Utah State. He's a tight end. Really good athleticism to win vertically down the seam. Really good ball skills. Could catch out of frame. I think he's got ability to be a pretty good blocker at the next level. So I think he's going to be outstanding. Love the guards at Oklahoma and at Boston College. In particular, Ben Powers of Oklahoma State. Chris Lindstrom of Boston College. I also thought Dalton Risner of Kansas State was outstanding. Chihuma Udoji of USC was really good, and Garrett Bradbury of NC State was really good. It was a good group of offensive linemen, particularly interior guys. I thought Risner was outstanding in pass protection. Lindstrom and Bradbury were really good in the run game. I thought it was a really good group. Those are some guys to keep in mind on the offensive line. Defensively, there are a lot of guys that did a really good job. I would say interior guys, Dylan Mack of Texas A&M, Saunders of Western Illinois, Kalen Saunders of Western Illinois. Great use of hands. Dylan Mack's got good power and leverage. Really good instinctive player against the run. Both good players. They're going to contribute early, not be high picks. I'm trying to give you some guys that are going to make teams, but they're going to help you even if you're not getting them really high. Edge rushers, no doubt, Montez Sweat of Mississippi State was outstanding. He was really, really good. Charles Imanihu of Texas was outstanding. His pass rush ability to dip his shoulders and shorten the corner was outstanding. I thought he was good in run defense as well. Sweat is just unbelievable. You know, he's a up-the-field rusher. Doesn't bend quite as well, but he's got really good edge rush speed. Linebacker, I thought Bobby Arorki of Stanford and Terrell Hanks of New Mexico State was outstanding. We don't do a lot of live stuff as much as I would like in pursuit stuff, but I thought Hanks was really physical playing off blocks and really good athleticism. A worker from Stanford's really good point of attack player. The other Temple player that really impressed was Rocky Sin of the corner. Lonnie Johnson of Kentucky, Mark Fields of Clemson. These were really good. Sin's got a lot of athletic ability. Johnson and Fields really did a good job athletically making plays. At safety, I thought Nasir Adderley of Delaware and Marquise Blair of Utah were outstanding. Adderley was pretty solid in coverage, I thought. Particularly good instinctive coming up, reacting to the run. I think he's got adequate ability to play against a slot, but speed guys are going to give him trouble. He's a better zone guy. Same would be with Blair, who's really instinctive, really physical, and come up and play the ball very well. We've got more breakdowns, obviously, up on the website for those of you. And we're going to have complete details on every player, not just at the combine, but going forward with all the prospects in the draft. So that's a look at that. Now, I want to get into some early looks at the Super Bowl, and we're going to get into, obviously, a bigger breakdown. That's going to be the focus on Thursday's podcast. Breaking down the tape of Rams offense against the Saints, Sean McVay does a really good job of getting defenders move in pre and post snap. So one of the things that I think is going to be pivotal when the Rams have the ball is their pre-snap movement against the Patriots stemming of their front. The more McVay can manipulate in coverage, and the more they can prevent leakage and protection and guys coming after the pocket, the better off for against Goff, the better off they're going to be. I thought the Saints did a poor job of turning the heat up on the Rams when the Rams were trying to get back in the game. You know, you heard me talk on Tuesday, and we talked a lot about officiating. All those things stand true. It was an egregious mistake, and the Saints should be in the Super Bowl, if not for a bad mistake. But let's get into we talked a little bit about the Saints' offensive issues in that game, but you know, and how they failed to take advantage and put the Rams away. But I want to spend a little time talking about the defense as it relates to the Rams in this game, the Rams offense, and that I thought the Saints, after doing a really good job early, I mean, it was a great effort by the crowd, keeping Goff out of sync. I thought they did a poor job, did the Saints, of keeping their aggressiveness going. The Saints regularly dropped 7 defenders, 4 pass rushers, versus the Rams' 6-man play action protection. So Goff was allowed to throw himself back in the game against soft coverage. And, you know, there were some really good throws that Goff had, but quite frankly, he developed enough of a rhythm to where he was able to make those. I think after studying the tape even closer, they took big advantage of that and got that rhythm going. I think that the Saints could have, even with their, you know, offense not, you know, putting the game away early, I think the defense could have put the hammer down on the Rams. When you've got them on the run, I think you need to be aggressive and get that pressure going and ratchet it up even more, and they didn't do it. And that allowed them, again, an opportunity to get back in the game. Now, this is not a home field. It's a neutral field, obviously, at the Super Bowl. But Bill Belichick, having worked with him and for him, he's going to not treat it the same way. He is going to be more aggressive. They run a press and blitz-heavy defense. They're really good at both. And with two linebackers who were pass rushers, and Dante Hightower and Kyle Van Noy, as well as a physical secondary, I think they're going to press and they're going to blitz early, and I think they're going to do it often. And I think they're going to try to take away the weapons by trying to attack the orchestrator of the weapons, and that's the quarterback. I think they will do what the Saints wouldn't do. What the Patriots like to do is work a lot of guys at the line of scrimmage, linebackers. Sometimes all the linebackers go. Some of them do. Some of them back off. They'll read the offensive line's pass sets to determine which linebackers go and which linebackers drop. They'll be very well prepared. You have a good game plan against the Rams. I think it's going to be imperative for the Rams to run the football well. I think that defensively, we saw the Patriots do a really good job against a great quarterback in Mahomes, who's talented, more talented than Goff, not more experienced, but more talented. And we saw the Patriots defense against a smarter and more developed, more proclaimed and accomplished quarterback in Phillip Rivers caused them a lot of problems. Now, the biggest problem for the Chargers is the defense couldn't hold up, but I thought they did a good job against him defensively. So I think that it is going to be a real big challenge for Jared Goff here. And so I think that what you saw in his play against the Saints is going to be something that is going to be much more difficult for him to have success against the Patriots defense that's going to be very well prepared. And I think it's going to be key to the Rams to be able to run the football, have some control there so that they can keep some of the pressure off. Because if Goff's under consistent pressure, he will not have consistent success against his Patriots defense. Now, let me give a little teaser here. Again, we're going to get into this more on Thursday. Let's talk a little bit about the Patriots offense. Since week 12 or thereabouts, the Patriots have operated out of 11 personnel, one back, one tight end, over 50% of the time, about 52-53% of the time. Only the 49ers played out of 11 personnel less often over that span at 37%. In that time, the Patriots had the second highest rate of 21 personnel, two backs, one tight end, again, only outdone by the Niners. So to give you a framework, the use of the running backs, particularly in the passing game, was and has been a big factor. And it was in the two playoff games by the Patriots. And it was something that gave Kansas City a lot of problems. You know, they like to work the field horizontally. They like to get you into the, you know, a spread front. The ball comes out quickly. They do a lot of pre-snap movement to prevent you from pressing them off the line of scrimmage. And They kind of work upfield gradually, depending on how far they can get you moving back. But they really do a great job with White and Burkhead. They do a really good job. They did a really good job against what I think is a very good defense in San Francisco, in San Diego, and again, I thought they had really good success against the Chiefs. Now, again, the Patriots to find a way to discourage press coverage by stacking their wide receivers or putting them close to each other, often closer to the formation than to the sideline. Edelman in particular can be seen motioning a lot out of the backfield across the formation or from outside to the numbers into the slot in order to create that type of look. You know, they may start him in the backfield and with a running back is split far outside the numbers to the left of the formation as the defenders are scrambling to get in proper position versus this pre-snap look. Then Edelman motions to the other side behind Gronk, and then Gronk pushes up the field to cut off the corner angle on the out route, and then Edelman runs from the slot because he started in the backfield in motion to the slot position off the line of scrimmage. It's you never really get a chance to get close to Edelman the way you want to, resulting in a very easy completion. And then they do that very effective between the 20s. But in the red zone, they do a really good job and often take Edelman, motion him from out wide to a stack position, maybe with somebody that maybe like a Dorsett or somebody, and you can't press both receivers with Brady snapping the ball before a guy like Edelman gets set. So they have that smash concept as it unfolds. The defenders over the stack on Edelman, who runs a quick outright, then the other guy, let's say in a case like a Dorsett, is left free to win over the top. And if it's in the red zone, it's for a score. So it's deception for the better part of two decades. Belichick has gotten defense into thinking one thing is coming and then beating it with another. Belichick has a lot of involvement in teaching Josh McDaniels what he wants and in terms of that. And it's an idea that if you are, again, have smart players, and this goes back to what we talked about, the Senior Bowl and evaluating players' intelligence. Belichick wanted to learn more about a guy's intelligence than anybody I've ever been around, and this is why. You can do more things with them. And they're just a little bit better at being able to do that. So I think it's going to be interesting. I thought that that the Rams did a really good job, again, getting back into the game and having a real advantageous situation against the Saints, not pressuring them as much defensively. So we're going to get into that. And of course, on LandryFootball.com, we'll have even more detail X's and O breakdowns for you as to what's truly happening in this matchup. Want to end today's show with a couple of questions. Richard asks, he asked some of the things that stood out in the Senior Bowl. Richard, I think we covered all of those. He also asked, what was my scouting evaluation of Julian Edelman out of Kent State? As an option quarterback, really good player. I can remember exactly what I gave him. I gave him not higher than a 5-4 grade. You know what that number grade means. It's a guy that didn't have a position. But what I do remember in the report was how smart he was, how tough he was, and how good of a leader he was. And those things transferred well. I don't think everybody finds a way to make him as successful as Bill Belichick has. It's much like a Wes Welker type of guy. So at least Wes was a receiver. Julian was a little bit more of a project. So another, you know, kudos again to Belichick for understanding basic fundamentals of what you're looking for in a player and taking advantage of that. Did a really good job with that, no question. Michael asks about he talked about the podcast about the NFC Championship game. I went into that. He asks about grading positional hierarchy with players in the same grade tier. And again, as we get closer to the draft, you understand that. You understand that players with the same grade tier and the same plateau of grades, then which players are more important? Now, obviously, you can then go, depending on your needs, you can factor that in and take a player of need as long as he's in the same grade tier. In my view, that's the way to do it. But in general, without regard to needs, what are the most important position is what Michael's asking here. For example, he says, with the increase in defensive snap on nickel and dime, does this change your view on positions in the hierarchy? For example, does a safety who can play both safety positions, nickelback and dimebacker, have more value? Well, of course they do. Absolutely they do. That's going to affect their grade value, though. That's going to put them a little higher. So they will be perhaps in a higher grade plateau than someone who can't do all those things equally well. Being able to play both positions, and most safety positions are interchangeable today, pardon me, than it used to be, and the ability to be able to line up inside, cover a slot, and be physical enough to maybe jam a tight end and defend the run is really important. So, yes, absolutely they have more value. You mentioned, let's see, a few years ago, I read somebody, the importance of value positions on offense and on defense. Well, let me just give you, instead of just, you know, reading what you said here, let me just tell you, let's see, you asked, do I agree with the order? I'll just give you my order. In your opinion, have hybrid defenses changed the order? I wonder if nickelback should be added. Well, nickelbacks are in another category. Nickels are going to be corners. So what you want is you're still looking. A nickel falls into a category. Is he in nickel? You're talking about a nickelback. You're talking about a corner or a safety corner hybrid that can play inside. Well, that guy's going to be graded within the corner in the safety groups. He may be graded more as an inside guy than an outside guy, but he's already graded. So nickels are not necessarily a separate position. They're a position within a position, if you will. And certainly a linebacker that's a three-down linebacker because he can play in on nickel and play in coverage is going to have more value there. But that's the same thing as creating a, you know, a will backer versus a Sam backer that maybe is only good on early downs. Well, he's going to have more value. It's as simple as that. You look at the percentage of snaps of your personnel groupings every year and what you want to run. So obviously, you're going to slant your value towards how you use a player. If you require your tight end to be a better blocker than most, you're going to put greater value on a guy who can be a good blocking tight end than maybe others might. It does not mean you're going to take them higher, but it means that they're going to be more value to you. So in terms of your priority, all that factors in. Here's the thing you need to know about the priority of the importance of position in the league. Okay, regardless of need, okay, because if you got your young quarterback, you're not looking for a quarterback, I get that. But the most important position is quarterback. The second most important position is pass rusher, okay? And the reason is the importance of the quarterback necessitates that the ability to rush the quarterback is very, very important. An impact defensive interior defensive lineman. The ability to be able to penetrate, push the pocket, and cause havoc on the quarterback is really important. Okay, then the next would be blindside tackle. Now, that normally is the left tackle, but it is more increasingly important to have two tackles that play what we call left tackle feet, that have blindside tackle feet. Because defenses have a way with multiple rushers or by flipping their rushers to attack your weak side. And if you don't have two tackles that can protect at an elite level in the passing game, then you're going to have to chip and you're going to have to keep a back or a tight end more in protection. That means one less guy going out on a route. I mean, in essence, if you got a guy like a Mark Ingram or an Alvin Kamara who can block well, but how often do you want them to stay in and chip? I mean, you want them to stay in and recognize blitz pickup, but the more they have to stay in and chip against and help a tackle, the less they can go out on a route and make a play. So those are your priorities. That's the most important. So when you start talking about, you list things like right outside backer, and it's not about right outside backer, left outside backer. It's about an edge rusher. It could be a defensive end that can play every down. If you're a wide nine technique like a Seattle or a Philadelphia, you're a hands in the dirt, weak side defensive end. That same guy in New England would be an edge rusher in a stand-up position. He might be an outside backer, not necessarily right or left, but an edge rusher. So ignore that part of it. Okay, then the next things that are would be most important would be, in a general sense, would be guys that can score touchdowns for you. Okay, and change guys that can help shut down playmakers. So, you know, as you got those four, you put in that next tier of importance, you put in a great receiver, a great cornerback, a great running back, a tight end that's a weapon. Not, you know, I mean, I'm talking a Travis Kelce guy, or certainly a Gronk, who's a great two-way guy. Those type of guys, you can't sit there and just put a tight end down the list. Not if he's a weapon. Now, if he's a guy that can play a role, he's not as high down the list. So you're asking about positional importance. I'm clarifying it more specifically as it relates to what type of tight end, what type of receiver. It does not matter if it's a slot or a wide guy. It's a playmaker, a guy that's going to score for you. You can have an Anthony Brown type of guy is a football player that it is, or an Odell Beckham, or a Julio Jones, or a Julian Edelman, guys that can make plays for you. An Alvin Kamara in the running back position. So that's important. So that's where you go. On the offensive line, the next most important position besides your two tackles is your center. Make the line calls, smart guy, good leader, tough, physical, can work the run and pass game. Okay, then the next would be the guards. Okay, we talked about playmakers, running backs, receivers, tight ends. You know, how important is a fullback? Well, fullbacks, you know, has some value down the line to the Saints or the Patriots. Other teams, they don't have a use for a fullback. On the defensive side, again, you know the importance. It's defensive linemen, it's defensive ends, defensive tackles. Okay, and that's, you know, to me, that's both sides. You know, that position is most important. Then an elite corner is important. And then certainly safety. You need to have five starters. I mean, you need to have five quality starters, more so in the secondary, more so than three linebackers. Linebackers are important, depending on your scheme. Well, what's the most important position at linebacker? Well, tell me what your scheme is. Mike backer is really important because you make the checks, the line calls, you clean up things in the run game, and you got the ability to cover the middle of the field in the pass game. If you're playing in a team that plays a lot of cover two, a Brian Urlacher is important a player as there is on the defense in that style of defense. I mean, is as important as any. He could put him number one. In others, not as important, but still very important. Don't confuse the linebackers to edge rushers. The guys that can rush the passer are really important. You can call them OLB, right OLBs, LOLBs. That's not pertinent. What's important is pass rush, the ability at Mike backer to be a three-down player. If you're not a three-down player, you're not as valuable as someone that is a three-down player. Obviously, safeties are important. The ability to be able to cover is really important at safety, but you also have to have some versatility. If you're not a great cover guy, you can still play safety, but you better be like a linebacker in nickel that can defend the run and it can at least stay with a back out of the backfield or a big tight end. So that gives you an idea of kind of where the importance are on offense and defense. So anyway, appreciate that question, Michael. So if you got any questions, make sure you send them over here. Hit contact Chris and we will get it done. Hey, again, we are playing catch up on the website with being out of town and obviously getting over this flu, which is still battling. But we're going to get heavy again into the Super Bowl this week and also working on free agency, getting that up for you as well. So take advantage of it on LandryFootball.com. Sign up for that newsletter. Just send us your email and we'll take care of it for you. And we'll talk to you again Thursday. Break down the Super Bowl even more. Answer your questions on the Super Bowl or anything else related in football. Send it to us right here on LandryFootball.com podcast. And we'll talk to you on Thursday. Have a great week, everybody.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence. This is an In the Trenches with Ian Beckles. Quick fix on Radio Influence.
The Patriots are as healthy as they've been all year. We got Tom Brady, who is 41, talking about playing till he's 45. He has four MVPs. Now, Brady last year didn't have Edelman. That was a big deal. 2 years ago, he didn't have Gronk. And this year, Gronk and Edelman are both healthy. That's a big deal. That's a big deal for Brady. But to me, once again, it's all these different chess matches during the game. You know, what does McVay do with Gronk? Do you put Talib on him and eliminate him? We know that Belichick tries to figure out a way to eliminate one thing on the other team. That's going to be tough. The Rams come with a lot. They really do. And you can't just say, I'm going to take away Todd Gurley. C.J. Anderson is a bitch, too. And they got receivers everywhere. So there's a lot to eliminate. For the Patriots and for the Rams, really, think about it. I think both of their game plan is going to be to stop the running game. If the Patriots run on you, you lose. If you allow the Rams to run on you, you're going to lose. Those are two very good football teams. And if you allow them to run on you, you're in big, big trouble.
In the Trenches with Ian Beckles can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.